సహనావతు సహనౌ భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Radio Sai Study Circle. In response to many positive and encouraging feedback to the first episode of this program, we are back again to dwell and discuss on another tiny drop from the infinite ocean of Bhagwan's message and teachings. And like in the previous episode, we have with us four former students from Bhagwan's university. Three of them, Amay, Sai Giridhar and Ganesh, are research scholars, while Mr. Rangarajan, after serving for many years as a faculty member, is currently the controller of examinations in Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And it is he, sir, who will be moderating this session. So, sir, tell us, what are we going to discuss today?
Thank you, Bishu, but we must not forget that Bishu himself is an alumnus of our institute and is also a student of Bhagwan's University. Sai Ram to all of you.
Sai Ram, sir.
Today we have chosen a very interesting Chinnakatha of Bhagwan, and this is about a minister and a king. So here we go. There was once a minister to a king who was in the habit of declaring whatever happened was for one's good. So one day the king cut his finger while slicing a piece of sugarcane, and seeing the bleeding finger, the minister said, you know, as usual, God does everything for the best. The king flew into a rage and he said, here I am suffering with the pain of a bleeding finger and you say God does everything for the best? Enough of your philosophy. Is this the way of consoling me? And how can this be for the best when the pain is so intense and real? The king immediately committed the minister to prison. But even then, the minister calmly said, even this sentence is for my best. It so happened that a few days later, the king went alone for hunting in a forest. And when the hunting expedition was over, the king was resting under a tree. Just then, the servants of a certain tribal chief of the forest seized the king, bound his hand and foot, and the king questioned them, why do you bind me? What are you going to do with me? The tribesmen replied, we are going to sacrifice you at the altar of a goddess. It is our custom to offer her a human sacrifice once a year. The time has arrived and we have been looking out especially for a human being. We are fortunate in having found you. And the king remonstrated, let me go. I am the king of the realm. You cannot kill me for the sacrifice. The tribesmen laughed and said, wow, we are glad that this year's sacrifice would be unique and our goddess will be highly pleased because we are going to offer as sacrifice a great personage like you. The king was carried, duly placed on the sacrificial altar. Things were ready for the death blow. The priest then noticed the bandage on the left hand forefinger of the king. They removed the bandage only to find that a portion of the finger was cut. The priest said, this man is not acceptable as a sacrifice to our goddess. A man with a defect in his body is not fit for the sacrifice. Let him go. It was then that the king remembered the words of the minister uttered when his finger was cut. God does everything for the best. He realized that the injury to his finger alone had really saved him from death. He at once hurried back to the palace, went straight to the prison to set the minister free. And he said, O minister, I seek your forgiveness for the rash and cruel treatment accorded to you. The minister said, Your Majesty, you have done no harm. There is nothing that I should forgive. But the king very curiously questioned, it's fine that what happened to me was for my good. But why did you say that my sending you to prison was for your good? The minister smiled and replied, if I had not been confined, O king, in the prison, I would have accompanied you when you went for hunting. And I would have been in your company. When the tribesmen came to know that you were unfit for sacrifice, who would they have chosen other than me? to offer as a sacrifice. So God does everything for the best. So this is a very beautiful story that Bhagwan narrates to show how, truly speaking, whether we like it or not, whether we see the meaning in it or not, but everything eventually turns out for our good. And this is what people talk of positive attitude. One may say this is a positive attitude, but in the spiritual parlance, this is nothing but true surrender to the Lord, wherein we accept everything, anything that happens in our life is for our good. Yeah. So, when really a couple of us were sitting the other day thinking about this, a beautiful structure evolved in this, how an individual can move on this continuum of true surrender. Maybe we could say it starts with a very gross level quality of positive attitude. Once the positive attitude builds strongly in an individual, it brings in faith. And when faith becomes strong and we start believing in the things that happens to us is for our good, we see many a time the deeper means which God uses to take us towards our goal. In a way, we are able to understand the mysterious hand of God working in these events. And that is how, as people say, we see the bigger picture. And once we see the bigger picture, we develop the quality of acceptance. And it is true acceptance which eventually leads a devotee onto the path of surrender.
So many beautiful lessons.
It's a beautiful lesson. So what I thought today in our study circle, can we move on this ladder from positive attitude to faith, to deeper understanding of the ways of God, to seeing the bigger picture, and then acceptance, and finally move on to surrender. And in each of these stages, let us share our views, our experiences, and try to understand this beautiful concept.
Sure.
So, Bishu, shall we start with positive attitude?
Talking about positive attitude, I am really tempted to talk about a colleague who works in our office in Radio Sai, Raghuram. You know, unfortunately, 4 or 5 years ago, while he was studying in the Vrindavan campus of Swami's University, he was in his third year, and because of an accident, he lost movement in his legs, in his hands, and he was paralyzed waist down. So it was really a very, very pathetic condition. He spent 2-3 years in the hospital, but after he was back on the wheelchair, he desperately wanted to do something. He wanted to be useful to himself and to be useful to society. And so he started coming to the studio. He wanted to learn new skills. He wanted to develop new talents. He didn't want to just sit at home. And so he learned video editing, and he kind of gained a lot of proficiency in video editing. And slowly he's got a good deep voice. We started using his voice. In fact, some of the announcements that you hear on Radio Sai are his voice, the deep voice. And he slowly learned other softwares like Adobe Audition, Adobe InDesign. And now, by Bhagwan's grace, since last 3 years, he's a permanent employee like any of us, serving at Radio Sai. And I feel it is all because of his indomitable spirit, his attitude to think always positive. And on so many occasions, Swami has blessed him. In fact, on the New Year meet, on 2 years ago, Swami blessed him very nicely. He created a ring for him, and in fact, Swami raised his divine feet so that he could take Padmaskar, because he cannot bend.
So, even in spite of all his challenges, he's still doing all this work.
Yeah, in fact, maybe any other person would have been a complete mental wreck. Yeah.
But it really inspires me, because he's always the one who always comes first to the office, and how much of a work you give, it's not enough, because he just finishes like that.
That's wonderful.
I think hats off to him. Really.
That shows that positive attitude is actually a personal choice. Mm. The positive attitude, how it shapes our life.
Yes.
How we actually experience our life. That reminds me of a beautiful anecdote of a Zen master who always had a smile on his face. He maintained his blissful countenance in all the situation, whether it is tragic or whatever it is. Finally, one day, he was in his deathbed. He was surrounded by his disciples who were very sad and obviously grieving. The master, however, was calm, serene and blissful as always. One disciple could not stop himself from asking the secret of his undisturbed, continuous happiness. Master replied with the same eloquence of joy in his voice as it reflected on his face always, "Every morning when I get up, I have a choice of deciding to be happy or sad. I simply decide to be happy, come what may." The answer was simple but profound. Every moment of our life, we have to make a proactive choice to be happy and not live like a reactionary machine. Happiness is a choice which we make with a positive attitude.
Yeah, and there are so many people who have made that choice. It's not just theory, you know. It's not that difficult.
Provided we really want to do it.
In fact, there's one very beautiful method that we all can follow. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, the attitude of gratitude.
Yes.
Every morning, if we can just begin with this.
Be grateful for the blessings that we have received from
Count
the Lord.
The blessings every morning. Mm-hmm. Thank you, God, for, you know, giving me these feet.
But
these
normally, you know, we always focus on what we have not got. Forgetting the tons of things that really
Absolutely.
We have.
And that's how the pattern continues.
Yes.
It's about seeing the glass half full rather than seeing it half empty.
There's another beautiful story, which real life story, which we published in Heart to Heart some time ago. The story of a young girl who was fortunately born into a Sai family. And you know, she grew up with intense love for Bhagwan. In fact, she loved Bhagwan so much that as if he's the only one to be loved on this earth. And Bhagwan too had, you know, mercifully done her Aksharabhyasam. You know, in those days, during darshan time, someone used to take the slate and write Om.
You mean writing the first letter for the child?
Yeah, for the child. So that happened in 1988. And since that blissful morning, you know, her love for Bhagwan had grown in leaps and bounds. And slowly, as she grew up, she heard about Swami's schools and colleges. And she desperately wanted to join Swami's university. And that was her only mission in life. And so after she finished her 12th, she applied for Swami's University. She didn't apply anywhere else. And just preparing herself for this, you know, she started already imagining that she's in the Anandpur campus. So, you know, she started getting up early in the morning. She started wearing sari. She started doing all the things that a student in the Anandpur campus would do. She used to say her morning prayers, evening prayers, go for every Sai session. And the day came when the call letter finally arrived. And she was absolutely ecstatic. It was the day of her life. The call letter has come. And at that
time, the call letter from the university?
For the university, for admission, yes. At that time, Swami was in Bangalore. So the father-daughter duo, they came to Parthi. And she wrote her entrance. And she just couldn't sleep that night waiting for the results the next day. So she eagerly went to the college. She searched the whole list. But her name was not there anywhere.
Ayyo.
You can imagine what kind of a catastrophe it was for her. Her father tried to console her, but it didn't help much. They went to Vrindavan. She had a darshan, but you know, darshan, she was only crying because she had so many questions for which she had no answers. Why did God do this to her? They stayed for a day and then they went home. And as soon as they reached home, she just hugged her mother, crying again unconsolably. The only saving grace was Swami had come in the dream of her mother the previous night, and her mother had seen that Swami was blessing her, and Swami gave such a beautiful smile to her. So her mother tried to console her, telling, whatever happens is for our good. Let us accept everything like the smile of Bhagawan, because whatever joys we get, whatever sorrows we get, it's all from the same source. So let us accept it. And her father tried another strategy, so to say. Father told her, you see, staying in Swami's college and following Swami's teachings and being a Sai student is no big deal. You be outside and try to be a Sai student. Try to follow his teachings. Swami will love you even more. And she took this as her challenge.
Mm-hmm.
She joined the engineering college in Bhuvaneshwar. And you won't believe, there she was the change agent. She transformed so many of her classmates into the right way, because she led such an ideal life and slowly joined an NGO, and later she started her own movement. It is called TOMS, Tomorrow on My Shoulders, where they try to help the underprivileged students.
Okay. This is really the right spirit, positive spirit. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's not that she was academically poor or something. Okay, she was the second best in the college and she was the ideal one. She was very inspiring, and later she got a job in TCS. And the TCS actually, they came and asked for her. And now she says, God is too wise to make any mistakes. And he's too kind to punish us. God mends our plans so that, you know, they blend into his master plan. So ultimately, I feel it's all about the passion to be positive in life. To see,
I think it's a very wonderful story you have shared. And You know, I think this is what leads to faith. Ultimately, what we call as faith starts with this
spark
of...
Now her faith is strong.
Yeah, positive attitude. So, Giridhar, can you tell us something about faith?
So, history has been witness to the fact that faith can do wonders. In fact, Swami often narrates this story of Kumarila Bhatta, who was the guru of Mandan Mishra, whom Adi Shankara had defeated in Mahishmati. What happened is, those days, Buddhism was quite prevalent in India. In fact, it was overpowering in some places. So, Kumarila Bhatta, who was a Mimamsa philosopher, he wanted to understand the secrets of Buddhism. In the guise of a Buddhist monk, he went to a Buddhist master and learned the secrets of Buddhism. But when his treachery was brought to the notice of the master, they took him to a cliff and dropped him from the cliff. So, even as he was falling, what he told to God was that, if the Vedas are eternal, let me be saved. Instead of saying, since the Vedas are eternal, let me be saved. So what happened was, he was saved, but he lost one eye. because he had partial faith. He doubted. He said, if the Vedas are
eternal. I've heard Swami telling this story often, and Swami says exactly this, that if was the word which...
That one single word made all the difference, you know. Absolute faith is what God expects from his devotees.
Very true. In fact, I'm reminded of one other story that Bhagwan very beautifully narrates. It so happened that there was this particular guru who had a lot of disciples. Once the guru takes all the disciples to the bank of a river, and he is very enamored by the bank, and he says, I wish that I have a hut in a particular place, a very picturesque place. So all the disciples are waiting to do something for the guru, and they start building a hut. And at the end of the hut, it's a very beautifully done hut, the guru comes and says, no, not here, I would like it in another place, maybe about a few feet away from there. So everybody just dismantles the whole hut, and another hut is built up within no time. The guru comes over there and says, no, not this place also. You have to build it in another place. And this starts to go on. Every time these disciples start to build a hut, the guru comes and says he is not happy with something. And even as the number of times are increasing, most of the disciples start to fall away, saying there is something wrong with our guru. Okay, this guru does not know what
the
exactly
conclusion we normally come to.
Our guru does not know exactly what he wants, and looks like he is not my guru. And it so happens, Swami says, at the end, after several times, there is only one disciple left who continues with the same amount of zest and enthusiasm to continue to make this hut. And then the guru says, why didn't you leave like the rest of them? And he says, I don't know anything but to follow your word. I have full faith that if you are asking me to do it again and again, it is good for me. Okay, and my job is to only listen to whatever you say. I have full faith in that.
And you know, Amaydas, in fact, the story continues, and eventually the disciple surrenders to the guru and asks him, okay, all this is fine, but can you tell me, why did you make me go through this? It is then that the guru says, I was making your mind ready to receive the blessings that I am giving you. So eventually all this is an exercise of the mind, because as Swami says, Mano Mulam Idam Jagat, the mind is the one which comes between a human being and God. So it is the mind which has to be tackled. And this reminds me of the wonderful story of Mahabharata. Swami talks about Krishna and Arjuna. This is a beautiful dialogue which goes on between them. On one occasion, Krishna points at a bird. Now all these are done only to demonstrate to the people the faith that these great personalities have. So Krishna points to a bird and he says, Arjuna, do you see the crow flying over there? And instantly Arjuna says, yes, Krishna, I see a crow flying over there. A little while later, Krishna says, no, Arjuna, I think that is actually a pigeon and it's not a crow. So Arjuna immediately reflects, saying, yes, Krishna, it is what you're saying is true. It is not a crow, it's a pigeon. A few minutes later, again Krishna says, no, Arjuna, it's a mistake. It is actually a peacock. Arjuna says, yes, Krishna, you are right, it is a peacock. So then, the same bird. So then Lord Krishna says, Arjuna, why are you accepting to whatever I am telling? And then, as Swami narrates, the profound message is, when Arjuna gives a reply, he says, Krishna, I don't really need to look at the bird to know what it is. The fact that you are saying it is a crow, it is a crow. If you are saying it's a pigeon because you have the power to change it, to become what you are saying it is. See, that is the faith which a devotee should have in God, because whom are we dealing with? You are dealing with the creator of the creation who can make anything happen. That indeed is really, I think, true faith.
Yeah, indeed. In the sense that we just need to accept whatever Swami says. No? Just listen to his words. For example, I am reminded of this story of a mountaineer who was climbing up a mountain. Suddenly he slipped and he reached the end of the rope. And then he shouts out to God saying, you know, God save me. And God says, just leave the rope. He says, God, I am asking you to save me, not kill me. Then God repeats again. He says, just leave the rope. This man refuses. He holds on to it very, very tightly, in fact. And it's freezing cold there. Next morning, there are some passers-by who come and they find this man frozen to death 3 inches above the ground. If only he had left the rope as God had commanded him and not used his own intelligence, he would have lived. In the darkness, he couldn't see, and he trusted himself more than the words of God.
I think that is where the problem comes. You know, we start analyzing the ways of God. What I feel is, I think faith is something, it is trust without reservations. Need not be belief without proofs. But you should not have reservations.
With heart, not with mind.
Yeah, it's with the heart. And I'm sure when we do it, from my experience, from many of the experiences we've had, over a period of time, we do get to see the intricate details which, you know, God actually has made for us. His ways do become apparent, but it takes time. So I think we move to the next step, wherein we start slowly seeing the deeper ways of God. How exactly he has planned out an event which will eventually turn out to our benefit. Amit, do you have any experience in this regard?
Yeah, in fact, I'm reminded of a very beautiful story, an email forward, which I'm sure most of us would have read. It's this story, you know, about a very devout person who used to pray to God, God, give me some work that I want to do for you. Give me some work. So one night the Lord appears and says, you really want to do something for me? Yes, I want to. You know, there is a big, huge boulder outside, a big rock outside. I want you to push it. So strange as it may sound, next morning this man gets ready and goes out, and he just looks at that rock and he is convinced he cannot move that boulder. But anyway, he gets on to his work, and you know, all day long he pushes. And absolutely, it does not budge a nanometer, if I can say so. And this goes on. Every morning he goes there and he's trying to push it. He pushes it all day long. Nothing happens. And then this mind comes and says, you fool, what are you trying to do? It will never move in a whole lifetime if you try to push also. It's not going to move. This man, you know, he's arguing with his own mind. He says, but what to do? This is the job I've been given. So then he says, who asked you to put all your strength to it? Just act as if you're pushing it. Don't really give all your strength to it. But this man, you know, he doesn't know whether to accept that argument. So that night he prays out to the Lord. He says, Lord, what is this that you have given? I'm not able to understand. The Lord appears and says, O man, O fool, as Swami says, Pichivada, what did I ask you to do? Did I ask you to move the rock or did I ask you to push it? So the man is still not able to understand. He says, Lord, I pushed it. He said, yes, I had asked you to push it, not move it. Moving is my job. Mm-hmm. And so saying, he just blows it and the rock moves. He says, but through the act of pushing, you have developed this strong body over the last 15 days. This body I needed for something else. And in fact, many a times in our life, Bhagwan gives us some role to play, which we wonder, why am I being put into this role? He's only making us ready that he wants to use this for something else.
We complain because we fail to see the big picture.
Yeah, and we see only the present. And that is such a narrow, limited view of things.
Correct. Yeah. In fact, when Swami says be in the present, he actually wants to expand our horizon. He's saying actually make the present a little wider. So it does not conflict with that present thing, but you should be able to understand the deeper significance of the
being. And the common analogy, rather story that comes to my mind is that story of the footprints in the sand. I think many people are aware of this, but it's worth repeating because it's about the story of how we are many times not able to see the big picture and how we complain to God. It is about the man who was walking on the beach one day, and as he's walking on the beach, so many scenes from his life that flash across the sky, and he notices that sometimes there are two sets of footprints, and at other times there is one set of footprints.
Correct.
And this kind of sets him thinking. It actually bothers him because he sees that the times which were difficult in his life, in those times he sees only one set of footprints. And that really concerns him. And he cries out to God. He says, Lord, you promised that if I followed you, you would walk with me always. But what is this? I mean, the most trying periods of my life, when I needed you the most, you're not there. There's only one set of footprints in the sand. And then God replies, see, my dear, the times when you see only one set of footprints, at those times, it was I who was carrying you.
True.
I think many of us often go through this experience when we unable to see the big picture, unable to, of course, we should not try to understand, but the basic thing as we discussed is this faith. Just follow Bhagwan. Just have faith and slowly we'll see in hindsight that there is a big
picture. Here I'm reminded of an anecdote which conveys the same message essentially. There was a farmer who was lying under a banyan tree for his afternoon nap. Even as he was admiring the broad, exquisite branches of the giant tree, a funny thought crossed his mind as his gaze rested on the banyan fruit. He wondered why God has to make small fruit for such a majestic tree. And just turning around, he saw huge pumpkins on the ground which had come out of a plant which was barely able to support itself.
Okay.
So he felt there's a flaw in God's design. Huge tree and small fruit, and small plant and life-size fruit. I mean, gradually he drifted to sleep, only to be awakened by a banyan fruit falling on his head. Then it struck him. Had the banyan fruit been a pumpkin falling on his head, he wouldn't have survived. He realized the infinite wisdom of God in the design of his creation.
That's a very humorous and very profound story.
In fact, this is one of Swami's stories,
right? Yeah, mentioned.
Talking of God's design, here's a personal experience of mine. When I was a student in the institute, the earlier years was very tough. Especially when you try to follow Bhagwan's teachings, a lot of challenges when you talk of mind control. And most of these times when I would face his challenges, I would scream at him, I would shout at him. After all, he's the only person whom you can be free with without any risk. Because you know he'll always love you. So I used to do that and really shout at him. It so happened that in one of the first interviews that I had with Bhagwan, Swami was telling the people around that this boy, the way he shouts at me, and when he said that, I felt so embarrassed because here was the omnipresent Lord revealing our personal battles that we have had. But then Swami immediately, you know, there was a beautiful smile, the motherly smile on his face. And the explanation that he gave me after that was so beautiful that till today the sting of all this has been removed from my life. What Swami said is, he said, see, do you think that all these problems are without any reason in your life? He said, look at an orange fruit. There is sweet juice inside the orange fruit. Mm. But what do you find outside? He said, there is a bitter skin. He said, that is God's design. To protect the sweet juice inside the fruit, you need to have the bitter skin outside. So what should you do if you want to drink the sweet juice? You must peel out the bitter skin. So Swami said, that is the way even in life when we come across these challenges, difficulties, all these are hurdles which we should remove to ultimately reach the nectarine core of our life experience. So really speaking, this is God's design. You know, we start seeing how beautifully Bhagwan has created everything and there is nothing meaningless in life.
In fact, it's very difficult to understand sometimes what Swami does. For example, I'm reminded of this incident which happened to Mr. Ram Brahmam, who used to be the caretaker of the Vrindavan Ashram. The day before his son's marriage, Swami just came to him and told him to cancel the marriage. He goes and he tells the bride's family that I'm cancelling the marriage. So they were shocked. The bride's family were very angry and, you know, they poured out their anger on Mr. Ram Brahmam and all that. He just silently took all that on to himself. But he just followed Swami's instruction. The next morning, unfortunately, his son was bit by a snake and he passed away. So as a result, after knowing this, the bride's family came back running to Swami. You know, they literally fell at Mr. Ram Brahman's feet and apologized for all that they had told. For now they understood the bigger picture of Swami's plan. And they saw that Swami actually saved the life of that girl. Because if Swami wouldn't have stopped that marriage on the previous day, you know, she would have become a widow on the very day she had her wedding.
Thank you, Giridhar. I mean, this is really leading us to the next step, that fine, we have positive attitude, it develops faith, we start seeing the deeper ways in which God works, and therefore now at this stage, we who call ourselves devotees should be able to see the bigger picture and accept things that come in our life. What do you feel, Amay? Do you have anything to say about
this?
Yeah,
in fact, here I'm reminded of a very beautiful example or analogy that is given by one of the very renowned speakers. He said, you know, it is like, imagine that you were to be standing at the ground floor of a building and watching a very beautiful march past going on. So the part of the march past that has gone past, you know, is the past. Mm. What you are able to see in the front is the present. And the march past that is about to come is the future. Mm. You don't know about it. But imagine a person who is standing on the 20th story of the building. What does he see? For him, there is no past, no present, no future. He is able to see the entire march past. Okay. So that person was telling that Bhagwan is something like that. In fact, he is the one who architects the entire march past. But if we can raise ourselves, every time we fall into a thing that we are not able to understand, let us raise ourselves and understand, see the bigger picture. 5 years back, what were we? 5 years from now, what we will be? And that will give us larger clarity into how to accept the things that are currently happening.
Yeah, and God is always right. Once we have this conviction, then we'll slowly start seeing the bigger picture. Yeah, in fact, there's one more story that, again, it's from Heart to Heart, we published some time back. It's about a little girl, Kathy, and her dream of getting an apple from God's hands. What happens is one day this girl sees that there's a big queue in front of God's home in heaven. Okay, and they all are there because God is giving everyone a sweet gift. It's an apple that God is giving everyone personally. And there's a big queue and there's a ladder from earth to heaven. She climbs onto that. She reaches the queue. The queue is long, but it's worth it because God is personally going to give the apple. And she's waiting for her moment and it comes. She stretches her hand. God puts that red shiny apple on her palms and she's so excited, she's so thrilled that it slips and it tumbles and falls down. You know, she's so excited that it slips actually. She starts crying. I mean, she's lost it. Everybody has got a gift and she has lost it. And God takes pity on her and says, don't worry, I'll give you one more, but there's a condition. You have to join the queue. Okay, no other option. I mean, she didn't want to go back to earth without an apple. So she joins the queue and it's a very long queue, but somehow she engages herself and her turn comes again. And finally, when her moment comes, now she holds the apple tight. And now God puts his hand in her hands and then he says, look, my dear girl, do you know why the first time the apple actually fell out of your palms? Because the first time, it was a rotten one. And now the apple which I'm giving you is actually the best apple available in heaven. I'm actually giving you the best one. And you are a good girl. You deserve the best.
So nice.
I think that is how God always plans his things. He is perfect. And we just have to believe and accept whatever we experience in life, whether it is good, bad, pleasant, unpleasant, as his prasadam.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, you are now listening to our special program entitled Radio Sai Study Circle. Please continue to stay tuned for the rest of the program.
So true, Bishu. You know, often we miss out the forest for the trees. And that's why they say we should have the helicopter view. And this is where I'm reminded of yet one more such story I had read once. It's about a girl, you know, who fails in a paper in the school. She comes back crying and says, Mom, I'm in a very bad mood today. And the mothers, you know, as usually they do, they reach you through the stomach. So she tells the girl, why don't I bake you a good cake? The girl is very excited because she loved cakes. So the mother is there. She starts baking the cake. And then, you know, she has a very nice way of teaching the girl a lesson. So she tells the girl, would you like to have some wheat flour? The girl gets wild. Mom, you said you'll give me your cake and not wheat flour. She said, okay, why don't you have some oil? So then the girl starts again, you know, crying. Then she says, okay, fine, why don't you have some sugar? Then the girl says, Mom, leave all this fun. I want a cake and not these things. And then the mother tells the daughter that, see, you do not like to eat sugar alone, oil alone, or wheat flour alone, because in isolation you don't like them. But when they are put together in the form of a cake, you love to eat it. She says, same is the way with God. Just because you fail in a paper in the school, you don't need to be so upset about it, because all these difficulties we face in life, when seen in isolation, may not be very pleasing to us. We may feel bad. But when put together, it emerges as a beautiful journey.
His plan emerges.
Yeah, his plan.
One of the key to see the big picture is what Steve Jobs, the CEO of Apple and Pixar Animation, calls connecting the dots. Now, you may wonder what these dots are all about. The dot here means the situation, the circumstances, and our reaction to it, because we are also a part of it. He shares out of his own experience that any situation, however unjust or challenging it may be, it has a hidden purpose behind it. It is only in retrospect that we realize the significance of that particular event. For instance, Steve Jobs shares that he had dropped out of his college 6 months after joining it, because it was expensive, he didn't see any value in it, nor did he know what he would do with his life later with that degree. So he decided to drop out, though it was a little scary at that point of time. But the minute he dropped out, he was free to attend any class that interested him. Then he goes on to share that much of what he stumbled into out of his curiosity and intuition turned out to be priceless later. He started attending the calligraphy classes, which was one of the best in the country at that time. He learned what makes a great typography great. It was an artistically subtle skill that science could never have captured. At that point of time, there was no hope of any practical application of all that he learned. But 10 years later, when he was designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to him. It was the first computer with beautiful typography. If he hadn't dropped out of college and dropped in those calligraphy classes, the personal computer that we see today wouldn't have had such brilliant typography. The moral here is that we have got to trust our gut feelings, our intuition, and follow our heart at times, which requires courage to break out of old patterns. The understanding of connecting the dots in retrospect or believing in the big picture is the key. You got to trust your moves, which comes from within.
Great, Ganesha. So I think having discussed so far, it now emerges that once you start really seeing the bigger picture of God, you must accept what happens in life. I'm sure the wise man is the one who wouldn't really want to go through this long journey and then accept things. But can we really start accepting things as they are in life? What do you feel, Ganesh?
See, there are times when we are tested beyond our limits. We face problems that cannot be solved or even avoided. The only course of action that seems to be left is silent endurance with maturity. Even Pandavas, for that matter, were pushed to their threshold points of patience by the innumerable injustice done to them by Kauravas. They started questioning Dharmaraja, the value of practicing Dharma. They even provoked Dharmaraja into taking some actions, lest their obedience to Dharma be mistaken to cowardice. Many people today feel that there's a very thin line between forbearance and cowardice.
Correct.
Dharmaraja had no answers to their questions, but Krishna had. Krishna gave them the antidote to all the suffering and pain, the four-word formula that gives inner strength and leads to inner acceptance. This too shall pass. Where there is acceptance, not by the submissiveness of conformity.
No, I think Ganesh, you just repeat that. It's a very, very beautiful very profound words.
This will help everyone.
Shall pass.
Whenever we face anything,
we just have to remember.
Swami says nothing is permanent. Everything is a past.
This mantra we have to chant. This too shall pass. And this acceptance is not out of submissive conformity, but the courage of observing, experiencing the situation as it is. In that case, there is no conflict. And where there is no conflict, there is peace. Yes, there may be pain, but suffering won't be there because there is no conflict, because there is acceptance.
Yeah, acceptance.
Sir, in fact, there was a drama that we had put on this particular theme. And Swami had laid so much emphasis on this line. He wanted this particular thing to sink in all the devotees who are watching the drama. So he made the main character, that is Yudhishthira, repeat this particular sentence four times in four different styles. Amai, would you like to?
Yeah, I mean, Swami told that the first time it should be said as, this too shall pass. Second time, this too shall pass. Third time, this too shall pass. And fourth time, this too shall pass.
That's beautiful. So answers which
I mean, was willing to. You don't want greater confirmation. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I'm reminded of one other very beautiful, touching episodes to which even I personally was a witness. This happened in 2003, about the month of July. After Bhagwan had come back, on June 3rd, Bhagwan had a fall and had fractured his hip. And it was after grueling 1 month that we finally saw Bhagwan in Parthi. And it was after Guru Purnima, and Swami had just come walking, and there was a little discomfort on Bhagwan's face. So our Professor Anil Kumar, sir, translator of Bhagwan's discourses, he asked Swami, "Swami, are you having pain? Is it paining today?" And Swami said, "Yes, it is paining, but I am not suffering." Nopi undi, kani suffering ledu, Swami said. And that was such a profound statement. That is, in our life, we will get pains. Even the Lord himself in a human body,
in a physical form,
has pain. But whether to suffer or not
is a choice
that we can make. And Bhagwan chooses not to suffer and always fill our lives with bliss and ananda.
In fact, most of the suffering is psychological because we are not ready
to accept. Even Bhagwan goes through so much discomfort, yet he comes out every single day and grants us such beautiful darshan with beautiful smiling face. We don't understand the amount of physical pain that he undergoes because he chooses not to suffer.
That's a very beautiful...
As we enjoy his darshans, we have to understand this message. Also.
And Bhagwan demonstrating this is one thing. And Bhagwan inspiring people to demonstrate this is another. Let me give the example of one of our contemporaries and incidentally not a devotee of Bhagwan, so to say, but obviously had to be a devotee of God. The story will make that very obvious. And this is about the tennis player Arthur Ashe. I'm sure most of us would have heard about him. He was the first African-American player to compete in the international sport of tennis at the highest level of the game. Now, during his playing career, he won 3 Grand Slam titles in 1968, 70 and 1975. But later, destiny took him into the jaws of death in a very strange manner. He underwent a heart surgery in 1983, followed by a brain surgery in 1988. Mm. Post the brain surgery, it was discovered that he was infected with the HIV virus that causes AIDS. And this was unfortunately due to a blood transfusion that he had received after his heart surgery. So from world over, all his fans wrote a number of letters to him. And one of the letters said this, "Dear Arthur, why does God have to select you for such a bad disease?" And to this, Arthur Ashe is believed to have given a wonderful reply. And let me quote exactly from what he is believed to have written in this letter. He says, "The world over, 50 million children start playing tennis. Of these, 50 lakh learn to play tennis. Among them, 5 lakh learn professional tennis. 50,000 come to the circuit. 5,000 reach the Grand Slam. 50 reach Wimbledon. 4 reach the semi-finals, 2 to the finals, and then, when I was holding the Wimbledon cup, I never asked God, why me? And today in pain, I should not be asking God, why me?" Now here was a man who had understood the subtle secret of creation and knew that there was some higher meaning in what he was going through. The same destiny which brought him face to face with the Wimbledon championship also brought him face to face with AIDS. How could he reject one and accept the other? That is why, as Swami says, when we accept everything in toto. This is true maturity in thought. So I think this is how slowly from acceptance we move on to what, again, Swami always talks about is total surrender to God. Giridhar, do you recall any instance where Swami has defined surrender?
Yes, sir. In fact, in Chennai, a few of us had a wonderful session with Swami.
When was that? When Swami visited
Chennai?
Swami
had gone for Atirudra Mahayagnam in Chennai in 2007. One of our brothers asked Swami, "Swami, Sharanagati ante enti?" Which means, what is surrender, Swami? Swami replied in Tamil. He said, Sharanagatila kudukkarthukku onnum illa. Which means, in surrender, there is nothing to be given. Then he went on to say, Nalladu nadandhalum, kettadu nadandhalum, yella avardhaan kudukkararnu dhrida nambikka vechukku. What it means is,
you are saying in Tamil.
Swami said these exact same words in Tamil. What it means is, be it good or bad that happens to you, have absolute firm conviction and faith that it is He, God, who is giving it to you at all times. Have this faith, and that is what is surrender. This is Swami's definition of surrender.
Yeah, I think Swami is also told there are two ways that you can understand this concept of surrender. You know, one is this concept of dasoham and the other is soham.
Mm-hmm.
So, what happens in dasoham? The person nullifies his ego to such an extent that he doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. He almost becomes like a flute in the hands of God. Mm-hmm. And Swami gives the example of...
The meaning of dasoham is, I am your servant.
I am your servant. I am your servant.
And soham is contemplating that
I am that. I am that. So, one is actually the micro and one is the macro. Yeah. And God is there in both.
Right.
So, Swami gives the example of Nagamahasaya, who is... one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. And Swami says, this person, he was able to escape the chains of samsara, this earthly existence, because he was so humble. There was absolutely no ego in him. And that is one of the reasons why he was able to attain the highest. And similarly, Swami gives the example of Vivekananda, who always believed that there is infinite potential in us. You know, he was a lion and he inspired everyone to be a lion. He said, we have to be that. And when you are that, you know, when you are that majestic self, you automatically break the chains of bondage and you become that. That is another level of surrender. And in fact, I feel when you look at the life of Hanuman, he epitomizes both actually. On one hand, you know, he says, I am Dasoham Kausalyendras. I am the servant of Rama. Yep. But there are other times
Me and my Lord are one.
So I think that is the stage from Dasoham to Soham. That is the stage of finally, from acceptance, we have to come to that level of surrender.
In fact, Swami gives a very practical tip for life. After giving that definition of surrender, Swami went on to say that our life is like a car. You know, he said, see, car has four gears. And each gear is like pain, pleasure, pain, pleasure. In each of these gears, the car will go smoothly as long as it is within that speed limit of that gear, isn't it? He says, in the same way, our life too, if we are in pain, we get adjusted to it. If we are in a constant state of pleasure, we get used to that too. But the problem comes when there is a transition from pain to pleasure. That is, in a car, when we transit from our first gear to second gear, second to third, Swami compares it to, you know, moving in life from pain to pleasure, pleasure to pain. That transition period is what is troublesome, where it's very jerky.
Mm.
So Swami says, what do you do in a car? He asks us. We all said, Swami, we press the clutch. Swami said, exactly. He said, press this clutch of faith that it is God who is giving both the situations for your own good. Have absolute conviction of that. He says, press this clutch of faith when you transit from pain to pleasure and pleasure to pain, then your transition will be smooth.
Beautiful. Mm. Beautiful.
So the life itself becomes smooth.
Very beautiful thought. And eventually, I think what happens when you really surrender to God is you do not have any individual will of yours. Whether it is the dasoham way or the soham way, either way your will merges with the Lord's will. And this can be best again explained through the story of Lakshmana and Rama.
Yeah.
When they go to Panchavati, you know, again Rama does this only to teach the world a lesson about the true surrender of Lakshmana. He just calls Lakshmana and says, Lakshmana, why don't you just go and look out for a good place and build a hut for us there? And instantly Lakshmana starts profusely crying. So again Sita plays her role and she feels very surprised. She says, oh Rama, what have you done? Why is Lakshmana crying? Rama says, I've done nothing. I just asked him to find a place and build a hut. And then again, to make it clear to all of us in future, Rama explicitly asks Lakshmana, Lakshmana, what is it? Why are you crying so much? And then Lakshmana says, Rama, you said I should go and find out a place of my liking and build a hut. He said, there is nothing like my liking. My will has merged with your will. And I think why Swami tells us is he wants to communicate to us that that is really true surrender. When we accept everything in our life, Swami's will and our will really becomes One. Yeah. So now I think we have come to the end of our discussion, and we have moved up the ladder all the way from positive thinking to surrender. But before we wind up, shall we have few personal experiences? Because the listeners have always said that anecdotes and stories are one thing, but can we have some real life experiences? Though we have already had a couple of them, can we have a few more?
Maybe I'd like to share here my own experience. I was here as a primary school student in Bhagwan's school from 1989 to 1993. And in 1993, when I was really in the thick of it, I was enjoying every single moment of my life. Something happened, I had to undergo a surgery, and after that, Bhagwan asked me to go and stay with my parents. And I had to leave the school very forcibly. And since that particular day, I mean, it was a very major moment in my life when I had to go back, leave Bhagwan. And every night I used to pray to Swami, "Swami, give me one chance to come back here. Why did you allow me to go far away?" And that was 1993. I tried to come back to Swami school in my 11th class, and then again tried to come back in my BCom, and again I tried to come back in MBA, and all the three times I had failed. And it was only in 2003, for the second attempt, when I tried to get into MBA, I finally got in. And it was 10 years since I had crossed. And when I look back today, I feel that my existence over here has now become so much stronger. My will, my wantingness, my willingness to live with Bhagwan has become so much stronger, only maybe because he allowed me to go away from him. And that intense desire to stay with him has now made me strong enough to say that I want to spend my entire life with Bhagwan. I just would like to say that maybe if I would have stayed for 10 years, maybe complacency would have crept in. And I would have said, okay, I think this is enough. I've spent quite a lot of time here. But today I find myself an extremely changed person. Mm-hmm. I feel that those 10 years are exactly what maybe my Swami wanted to give to my parents for me to stay along with them. So when I look back,
everything is right. In fact, as you narrate a slice from your life, I am reminded of what happened to me about 8 years ago. I was initially in the Bangalore hospital. That's where Swami asked me to work after I finished my post-graduation here. And
you mean the Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital?
Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital, yes. The hospital was then coming up. It was in the 2001. And after serving there for a year, unfortunately, I fell sick. And I was out of work for a very long period, almost for 2-3 years. And it was a very difficult time. And you know, those are the times when you pray to God every day and you ask those questions. Why me? Yeah. And yes, of course, I could go through that only because of His grace. But still, every day it was a pain. You think, why me? You know, I'm at this young age, I'm doing nothing. I'm in the hospital or at home, absolutely like a vegetable. I'm not able to do anything to myself or to my family or to society. But now when I look at my life, I feel those 2-3 years of sickness were actually real blessings in disguise. Because it was only because of that Swami moved me to Parthi. Swami told me not to go back to Bangalore hospital and stay in Puttaparthi. By the time my parents had shifted to Puttaparthi. And in fact, it was my dream to always be in Puttaparthi, because it is always different. You know, being in the physical proximity of Bhagwan is always different than serving, even though you are working in His own institution. So that dream really got fulfilled. And then during those 3-4 years, when I was actually not doing anything officially, I was keeping myself busy, reading so many books, writing articles, developing this flair for writing. And once I joined Radio Sai, writing, editing, etc. became a part of my life. And I feel I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have really done this job if I was not given those 2-3 years to develop those talents in me. So I feel God is always right. We have to always accept and doubt not, so that our life is bright. And we have to always... another important message I think that also comes out from this story is, you know, we have to always fight without fear and follow our conscience. And we have to never hurry. We have to wait, because then we'll definitely find happiness and light.
It's really been so nice, and I think we have learned a lot by discussing amongst ourselves. So now let's really start summing up. You know, let's remind the listeners the structure which we had followed using this Chinnakatha. We started with the gross level of positive attitude, leading to faith, moving on to understanding the deeper ways of God, perceiving the mysterious hand of God, and then we start seeing the bigger picture. This leads to acceptance in life, which finally culminates in true surrender. So would one of you like to do a quick summing up with your views? Okay, maybe
there's another interesting analogy also that comes up in this story. I mean, I was just thinking of the story, you know. If you look at the story, you have the king who didn't follow the minister. And in fact, you can draw this analogy of the mind and the conscience.
Wow, yes.
Okay, the mind is like the king, you know. The conscience, which is the minister, it always gives us good advices. But what we do? We love the conscience. Just like the
just
king,
like the king
loves the conscience.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And that is how we run into problems.
And still the conscience doesn't stop. It keeps telling you this is good for you, this is
and
good
for you. And conscience, you know, God in the form of conscience is always willing to help. You know, ultimately it is He who rescues. But we have to go through those trials and tribulations because we lock it up. I think that is another interesting thing. Follow the conscience.
Very beautiful.
Always.
I think that's why, as it is commonly said, what we meet in life is destiny. But how we meet it is self-effort. So what we understand from this Chinnakatha is that, yes, we need to surrender to the Lord. We need to accept whatever comes in our life as happening for our good. But that does also not mean that we should not put in our effort. In fact, this is the essence of Karma Yoga, which Bhagavad Gita talks about, that we do our best, assuming that everything is in our hands. But eventually we know that the victory or defeat, as Swami says, yatna prayatnamul manava dharmamu, jaya apajayamala daiva dinamu. That is, it is in man's hand to put in effort, but ultimately victory or defeat is in God's hands, and that is the bigger picture we talked about.
Yeah.
So it's been very nice having this discussion today, and really it's a profound message that we have learned.
There's
from
so
this
many lessons
small
that you can
story
draw
of
from
the king
the
and the minister.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's been very nice, and I
Thank you,
thank all of you
very much, sir, for moderating this session so nicely. And thank you all the research scholars for participating in this session. Dear listeners, this was an episode of our series Radio Sai Study Circle. And really, we definitely enjoyed offering this to you. And we are very keen to know what you feel about this program. So as always, you can send in your emails generously to listener@radiosai.org. Please do take a minute off to write to us and tell us your comments, your feedbacks, be it positive or negative. And this episode was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai in November 2010. To read the text of this program, please visit our e-journal Heart to Heart at htuhsai.org. Thank you very much for your time, and Sai Ram.